Friday, August 9th is in the books. Scott Wilson stopped by first from the Connecticut Citizens Defense League, the major gun ownership and gun rights group in Connecticut. He talked about gun laws in the state and what may happen on the federal level in the wake of the two mass shootings, one in El Paso, Texas, and one in Dayton, Ohio. Plenty of a blowback still from Metro North, taking 7 hours to get a train from Grand Central Station in New York to Fairfield a few days ago. Republican State Senator Tony Wong of Fairfield chipped in on that. He's contacted Metro North to try and explain what happened with a lack of communication on that train. And finally, Republican State Senator Kevin Kelly of Stratford joined us for his weekly update from the Capitol.
If it's happening in Bridgeport, the Valley, or Fairfield County, Paul is talking about it. Connecticut Today, WICC 600.
And we're at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, on the air at WICC 600, online at WICC600.com. You'll be hearing a lot about gun laws and what we should do and what we shouldn't do and what states have specific laws, what laws some people think are needed, what gun registration means, how easy or not easy is it to get guns in certain states. Joining us right now is a gentleman who can answer a lot of questions about what goes on here in Connecticut. Scott Wilson is head of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League, the CCDL. You may see their stickers around. Scott, hey, Paul here. Good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. Thanks for taking the call, and I'm certainly, with all the circumstances that are going on, I'm as good as I can be.
Yeah, okay, so first of all, Scott, for people who might not know about the Connecticut Citizens Defense League, the CCDL, but they've heard of it, what should you tell them about it? What do they need to know?
Sure, we're a nonpartisan grassroots organization that's defending our Second Amendment rights here in the state of Connecticut. Mostly at the state level, in terms of the legislative proposals that go through there. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of local things in terms of towns and municipalities as well, and some federal issues as well. We have not had to fight so hard at the federal level in quite a while. So, mm-hmm. We're gearing up for some of that.
Scott, first question, at the local level, at the state level, what is going on here in Connecticut in particular, what is going on at post Sandy Hook, and now we have this unfortunate situation that has happened this past weekend. Gun laws, gun restrictions here in Connecticut. We always talk about or hear about local officials who say we need more laws here in Connecticut, divorced from the federal level. What are gun laws like generally here in Connecticut? How have they evolved, and how does it compare generally, Scott, to what goes on in other states?
Well, we have here in Connecticut, we have much stricter policies in terms of being able to purchase certain types of semi-automatic firearms mm-hmm. that, are often referred to as weapons of war and the like, full auto, and, they're referred to, weapons suitable for soldiers in the battlefield. But the guns that are banned, typically, poster child would be the AR-15 platform rifle. Mm-hmm. There's no military in the world that issues it. It's a semi-automatic only firearm, which means it pulls. You have to pull the trigger one time to have one round come out of it. It's not automatic. So since Sandy Hook, we've had onerous gun bans. We've had a number of different other types of legislative proposals passed into law, temporary restraining orders without due process, things of that nature. So really, lately, what we have is our crop of legislators, both at the state And our federal congressional delegation to Congress are trying to tell other states that they should really be adopting Connecticut type policies, mm-hmm. To go along with them, so that way everybody in every state would feel safer. What they leave out is the fact that there have been some good proposals by Second Amendment friendly legislators here in Connecticut in the last several years that have fallen flat for one reason or another. Senator Rob Sampson tried to fund the Firearms Trafficking Tax Task Force, which was successful years ago. Mm-hmm. They refused to fund that. He's tried to get some tax credits on gun safes to encourage people to get gun safes if they don't have them. They've shot that down. This past year, one of the safe storage and the firearm bills that passed, we tried to get they tried to increase the penalties for somebody that steals a firearm from a motor vehicle from a Class C felony to a Class B felony. They shot that proposal down as well. So they're calling for more gun laws, and at the same time, they're not trying to address criminal acts with the use of firearms.
A couple more minutes here with Scott. Scott, thank you. We know you're jammed up today. We appreciate it. You know, Scott, you brought up something that one of my callers did the other day. We were talking about possible red flag laws. In fact, I had two callers, Scott, that brought up what you did about the restraining order statute that was kicked into gear here a few months ago or last year here in the state as you know, what one reason why there's a lot of worry about these sorts of things. Talk a little more about that.
Well, so essentially, a lot of the people that file restraining orders in the state of Connecticut, this TRO is it's an ex parte restraining order.
Yeah,
and 45% of the time, the person that the restraining orders that get filed by an individual, they get overturned by a judge as soon as the individual gets their hearing.
Sure.
Now, but in the meantime, there's people that have had their property seized. They've, you know, been embarrassed by having police show up to confiscate guns, neighbors, everybody sees everything. There's been no consequences under the penalties of perjury for somebody that misrepresents and misfiles a restraining order claiming their fear in their life. And if it's proven later to be a false claim, there's been no consequences for somebody that files those types of things.
Mm-hmm. So again,
and along with that, just to dance over real quick, because I know time is limited.
Sure.
72% of the criminals that are charged with a gun crime in the state of Connecticut are never convicted. Their charges are pled away. They're nollied. They're dismissed. And this is the calculated average across all the categories of possession of firearms.
Scott, you and I have talked before about what happened after Sandy Hook. Is it true, Scott, just to verify this again, because I think I know the answer to this, is it true that the laws and the regulations and things that were, you know, jacked up post-Sandy Hook, is it true that those, by and large, would have had no effect on the attack itself and what Adam Lanza did in the wake of that?
Sure. Well, they're calling for background checks. Well, Adam Lanza was denied a gun purchase at a background check days before.
Mm-hmm.
So background checks worked, okay, at least as far as in that instance.
Yeah.
They worked. What he did do was he stole a firearm. He murdered somebody. He drove illegally with stolen guns across roads, drove into a school zone, broke laws entering the school zones with the guns. Another topic of conversation would be the failure, the abysmal failure of gun-free zones. Went in and murdered a whole bunch of other people and then killing himself.
Mm-hmm.
The laws did not do anything to stop a mass murder. The guns that were banned in Sandy Hook are one thing, but we look back to very simply Virginia Tech, the massacre that happened there. With a higher body count, more wounded, that act was accomplished with two handguns and 10-round magazines.
What do you hear from gun owners now, Scott? Do you hear from any gun owners who may be NRA members or members of your organization? Is there any thinking here of, hey, you know what, we better acquiesce to these background checks because we're scared of what may happen in the future, or not?
No, I'm not hearing that. What I'm hearing is we're begging, we're pleading with our legislators, and now the president, because he's ready to fold. We're pleading with them to listen to our logic, listen to our reasons, understand our Second Amendment rights and how precious and valuable they are, and how people have fought and died for and certainly not just the Second Amendment, all our rights in general, but generations have gone before us to the grave trying to stand up and fight for our rights. And, you know, once we lose that right, it's gone for good. And if people think that, well, they just want common sense gun legislation, I'm sorry. You know, you look around, generally speaking, in terms of politics, where can you find any common sense? There's very little common sense as it pertains to all sorts of other things, not just firearms.
Assuming, Scott, and I think I do, I would know if I didn't, I've got a clean record, no criminal convictions, couple of speeding tickets here and there 5 or 10 years ago. I'm a clean record guy. How long would it take me under Connecticut law, roughly, if after I left the show today, Scott, and I went to a gun shop, I went to, you know, wherever, local gun shop or sporting goods store, and I wanted to buy a gun, how quickly or not would that take me in Connecticut? How does that work?
Well, that's a very good question, and the answer is you have to go through the best way to do it is to go through the process to obtain a Connecticut carry permit, which mm-hmm. gives you the gold standard to be able to purchase handguns, long guns, and be able to carry them, the handguns on your person, for personal protection. What town do you what town are you operating in right now?
Well, I'm here in Bridgeport. I live in Wallingford.
Bridgeport.
Yeah. Oh, no, but I live in Wallingford.
Let's look at it real quickly. We have the municipality level of background checks, mm-hmm. where you have three levels of background checks, and the biggest obstacle right now that people face is their own municipalities. Mm-hmm. Cities like Bridgeport, New Haven, Hartford, major cities where, I don't know if it's coincidence or not, there is a large minority population of people in those communities, mm-hmm. and they have the hardest time to get their pistol permits issued within a timely fashion.
To protect themselves,
To protect themselves,
yeah.
sure, and their
yeah.
families.
Yeah, sure.
The state has offered, in the statutes codified under 2935, 8 weeks to either issue or deny a pistol permit. We have towns like New Haven taking sometimes up to a year, and extra loopholes thrown in, or extra requirements, background check requirements thrown in that are not codified in state statutes.
So these cities, Scott, Hartford, New Haven, Bridgeport, whatever, generally they think that even though they have a large amount of gun crime, you know, it goes up and down, you and I both know that, but they think for some reason making it more difficult to have a law-abiding person, a law-abiding black or Hispanic person or white person who lives in these cities, they think that making it tougher for them to get a gun to protect themselves is going to have an effect on crime. Is that what they're thinking?
I would assume so, but what we have to know that when you have somebody, you know, this is a state of Connecticut pistol permit. This is a process outlined by the state statutes, not the Bridgeport statutes, not the New Haven statutes. You would think that it's highly unfair for somebody from Bridgeport or from New Haven or from Hartford to have to jump through extra hoops for a pistol permit versus somebody who lives in, say, Stonington, Connecticut or Goshen, Connecticut. You know, or some other town,
yeah.
some other small town, and there's been references and comparisons in the past at the legislature during hearings
yeah.
Between towns like New Haven and Goshen, Connecticut.
Scott, finally, do you run into people who they know who you are, whether they're friends or relatives or just people you meet, they find out who you are, and do you run into people that are really hostile to you and to gun owners and people you just can't? You can't talk with, you can't reason with, or are people a lot more forgiving of this and accepting than maybe the media makes out?
I think most people, if you have the opportunity to talk to them and point out the logic of, you know, the roots of gun control, the mm-hmm. racist roots of gun control, for instance, how the, you know, the first gun control laws came as a result of trying to keep freed slaves as, you know, disarmed,
mm-hmm.
disarmed subjects, even though they were freed. When you explain to them what people go through in those cities like New Haven and Hartford, when you explain that gun-free zones, it's just a sign that or a statute or a city ordinance that is intended to keep your property or your whatever area you control safe, but how... When is a madman who is intent on killing 10, 20, 30, or 40 people all of a sudden about to come in and commit an atrocity see a gun-free zone sign and say, well, I guess I can't go in there and kill?
Mm-hmm.
It's ludicrous.
No.
It's backwards. It's wrong. It's illogical. It's irrational.
Scott Wilson, head of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League, the CCDL. Scott, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it. We'll be in touch.
Thanks, Paul. Take
Thanks.
Care.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Scott Wilson there. Check him out, the Connecticut Citizens Defense League online. That's ccdl.us if you want to check it out. ccdl.us.
A place where you can complain freely. In fact, we encourage it. Connecticut Today with Paul Fuseli, WICC 600.
437, 438. Joining us right now, Republican State Senator Tony Wong of Fairfield. Tony, Paul here. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. How are you? Happy Friday, dear.
You too. Oh, from your lips to God's ears. Listen, your son, in the time it took him to get home from Yankee Stadium last weekend, he could have gone to California. Or like I said, we've been saying that all week on the show here, Tony, or he could have flown transatlantic and checked into a hotel in London.
Well, Paul, it's not just my son. It is
I know.
For all the commuters. And you had to understand that what happened on August 4th and the 5th was really poignant because he had gone to a Yankee Red Sox game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Saturday night, and many people in Connecticut took a train into the city to have a nice, fun time and a respite, taking a 12 o'clock train,
mm-hmm.
and in some cases, some of them didn't get home till the sun came up 6 o'clock in the morning.
Jeez.
And what really, really came out in all of this, Paul, is this, that the commuters were disrespected and neglected, and these were people that traveled on the weekend on a rare case. Think of the warrior commuters that do that Monday through Friday,
mm-hmm.
that deal with this kind of a delay, this kind of bad process or a neglect and disrespect on a daily basis. And we really wanted to be a voice for those commuters who said, enough is enough. When Metro North is the only game in town.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're reacting the same way, even when in the last couple of years, they came out with something called a Commuter's Bill of Rights. And they said, you know, we will have onboard personnel walk through the trains regularly,
mm-hmm.
and efforts will be made to provide accurate and timely information to customers. That's what they wrote. The fact that nobody walked through the trains, nobody communicated directly and respectfully, they did it through a loudspeaker system. And I got to tell you, that was possibly the most unpositive, disrespectful, adding insult to injury. And what we wanted to tell people is, stop disrespecting the commuters. They paid their fares, and you need to do a better job.
And Tony, as I said earlier, before I had you on, I said earlier in the show, said, listen, nothing is perfect in transportation. Trains have problems. Mother Nature kicked in that night. There was a bad storm in Westchester County. There were switch problems. Now, I caught a train out of Grand Central about 5 hours after your son did at 5:30. It took me, because of there was some residuals there, Tony, I didn't get back to New Haven. It took me 4 hours to get back to New Haven. But you're right. It's not so much the mechanics here, although we can argue about that. As I said earlier, Tony, it's disrespecting a customer. It's not living up to what you promise a customer or a commuter that you previously said you would do.
Absolutely. And I think the fact is, you go to any business, you go to a restaurant, you have poor service, but once you let them know, you have an effort to make up to them, to say, we made a mistake, how can we do better? Here is a free dessert. Here is a refund. And they actually have that in the Bill of Rights, that you can be provided a refund.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, wouldn't that be a goodwill gesture to say, we made a mistake, we can do better, we will do better, here's a refund for your troubles? It's a step forward for showing that you're willing to respect the commuter. Most important of all, I got to tell you, Paul, thank you for raising this issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just my son. It's all the people that use mass transit, which is a critical tool for us to get to and from our important mode of business, et cetera, making a living to pay the mortgage. But to do it in this way where they don't care, and even worse, they're disrespectful, is really unacceptable to me and to many people. And I want to give a shout out to Keith Rhodes, who just popped out. He said he's listening to you. Keith has been remarkable, but there have been so many other people that have shared their exasperation, frustration, venting toward anger.
Now, you wrote a letter, correct, to the MTA big wigs. What did you exactly say or ask in that letter?
What I simply said is, respecting that weather is sometimes difficult to control,
mm-hmm.
but you can control your effort. You can control the response that you give to the commuters. Walk through the trains. Be responsive. Let the people know what the circumstances are. The fact nobody knew what was happening was dangerous in my mind, but ultimately it is to say to them, look, we're going to be the voice for the people that have been neglected and disrespected, mm-hmm. and you need to listen to them. You need to listen to fixing the problem and working harder at it.
Did you get any sort of a response yet from what you sent in, Tony? Has anyone got back to you?
Not yet, sir. We sent it out yesterday morning.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting for a response. You know, there was a great piece written by Hearst Publications raising that issue.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They had some reporters that lived through that experience.
Yeah, on the train, yeah.
Without
yeah.
a doubt. But I'm going to go back to those warrior commuters that do this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Paul. They're the people that we have to give a bigger voice to. They're the people that we need to be fighting for, because unfortunately the bureaucracy and the entrenched indifference of the Metro North Metropolitan Transit System is obviously showing their side, and we need to fight for the community.
And Tony, you know, you probably have a lot of constituents in your district who, you know, once a month they have to fork over that to buy that monthly pass if they go into New York or to Westchester or whatever, you know, every day, which can be, if you're making the run all the way from New Haven or West Haven all the way into Grand Central. I mean, that's $500 a month, Tony. Now, people will say, well, you're not driving, you're not spending that on gas. I say, well, yeah, but that's no, again, like I said earlier, that's no excuse. And again, when you're dealing with an entity that, as you say, is essentially a monopoly, people understand that things screw up. We can't control the weather or if a tree falls. But again, common courtesy, Tony, just like you said.
Paul, without a doubt. And fares keep on increasing and service keeps on declining. It's an inverse curve, which adds to people's frustration. And bottom line, if you say to people, this is what I'm going to try to do, and I'm going to get there, and if we fail at it, let me tell you and let me explain why. But the fact that there is virtually no communications that evening and that disrespect is compounded by the frustration of a late weekend evening for people that are trying to get home, It's terrible. It's a terrible way to do business. It's a terrible way to build good customer relationships. And unfortunately, we don't have any other choice. And, you know, and more importantly, I'm speaking for the commuter that says, we're going to make you do better.
Tony, thank you. We appreciate it. Keep us up to date on this. Email me with anything. And if you get a follow-up on this, we'll definitely have you on maybe next week. I'd love to know what they say to you, okay?
Well, I will keep you updated. And thank you for bringing that up. And more importantly, thank you for giving the commuters a voice as well, Paul.
Well, that's what we're here for. Tony, thank you. Tony Wong, Republican State Senator from Fairfield. He had a family member, his son, on that train a week ago tomorrow night. It left. It was the 1207. I've taken that plenty of times. It left Grand Central 1207, took 7 hours to get to Fairfield. Oh, jeez. You folks, you literally could have flown to London and been in a hotel by the time that train got into Fairfield. As ourselves now, let's come back to reality here. Republican State Senator Kevin Kelly is with us in Stratford. Kevin, aren't you glad you're not in Washington? Aren't you glad you're here in the sane, beautiful People's Republic of Connecticut?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's an easy question, Paul.
Gets a little too crazy for it's crazy enough in Hartford, right? Right?
It is.
Kevin,
we haven't fallen to the cesspool level.
No, yet. No. Let's keep away from that. Kevin, our weekly check-in. I know that we're getting close now. Now the first special session is happening when? And that's for bonding issues, right? When's that coming up?
Well, that's a really good question because, you know, the governor's going to take some time and he's out of pocket for the rest of August. So obviously pressing issues for the state of Connecticut, not only the one you mentioned, but other things mm-hmm. such as sports betting and casinos, they're all going to have to wait. And so there's nothing on the horizon that we're getting,
okay.
But we do know the governor's going to be out of pocket.
What was your reaction, Kevin, to the, again, we've had a couple of these proposals again to try and kickstart something here in Bridgeport at Steel Point, which is a magnificent location, road-wise, water access wise. But, you know, there was this thing about would the Indians give up tribal wins if they took the Excel Center in Hartford? They came back and said no. MGM's got another lawsuit. What are your thoughts on all this going on?
Well, I think you touch on a number of issues. Number one is that Bridgeport and the greater Bridgeport region, I think, is one of the best opportunities in the state of Connecticut. You see with the Steel Point property, gorgeous. It's beautiful. And the problem is many times Connecticut at the capital doesn't quite, I'm going to say, appreciate or understand what a vibrant and healthy Bridgeport could mean, not only to the region, but to the state. And you see a lot of proposals, many of them have no potential to see the light of day, but all too often they're just trial balloons. And what we really need in the state of Connecticut is leadership and a governor that's going to put Bridgeport first and to move Bridgeport forward. And to do so, you really have to get your ducks in a row. You have to do things right. You got to get all the stakeholders to the table. You have to get everyone in the same room and come out with a plan that can actually work, not keep throwing up trial balloons. And I know living in the region, as long as I have, I've seen numerous proposals for the city of Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. And people get excited. They rally around the cause. And then the cause dies.
You know, and Kevin, I had a couple of calls from listeners this week who said it's frustrating. They said that, you know, they want to be around long enough, right, for people to hear people say, hey, what are you doing? Let's go to Bridgeport tonight. Let's go to wherever. Let's go hang out there. And you're right, Kevin, it's frustrating.
It is. And it's a shame. Because I don't believe other areas, Hartford, New Haven, even Stamford, get that type of attention. And so Bridgeport really deserves better. And I think we need a governor who's going to put Bridgeport first and make sure that the efforts that are behind Bridgeport actually don't just turn into another frustrating mm-hmm. experience, but actually turn into something successful. Because I believe once Bridgeport gets to maximize its potential, it's going to benefit Connecticut in a huge way.
Kevin, in about the 20 seconds we have left, forgive me if I've asked you this before, but would you be willing to entertain, perhaps now that we see another down month of revenues, walking away from the agreement with the Indians and telling MGM or Wynn or somebody in here to come in bigger and say, listen, bond some of those or put up a security somehow for some of those slot machine losses, but let's do something different here?
Well, certainly I'll always look at any opportunity to do something good for the city of Bridgeport. The devil is always going to be in the details. I know right now when we talk about the tribes and MGM, the compact is in place and it all is about when could they get the next gaming enterprise online. And the Indians have said that they would hold back any revenue, and whatever that delta is between the time that things start to go in that direction away from the compact, mm-hmm. you're going to lose that revenue. And can Connecticut in this poor, I'm going to say, budgetary process,
yeah,
sustain a loss of revenue? They can't. And so you got to look at the details. We can't put more harm into the budget.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
But certainly we have to look at what's in the best interest of Bridgeport and what can actually turn it around.
Kevin, thank you. Have a great weekend as always. We'll check back with you next week. Thanks, Kevin.
You bet. Take care.
Kevin Kelly, GOP state senator from Stratford, always watching the casino issue as well. Hey, it's right in his backyard.